Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Alexa, who is Adam Ferrara?
Adam Ferrara is an American actor and comedian known for playing the roles of Chief Needles Nelson on Rescue Me, Sergeant Frank Fiorelli opposite Edie Falco on Nurse Jackie. He was a co-host on the U.S. version of Top Gear. He has had 3 Comedy Central specials and his new album is called It's Scary in Here. Adam's new podcast is a big hit and available everywhere.
Sounds like it could be funny.
Sounds to me like 30 minutes you'll never get back.
Look!
He made it.
Yes, now we can start the show. And we got another great show for you this week. My guest in the ADD interview is writer, director, executive producer. You know him from the TV shows Martin, starring Martin Lawrence, as well as the co-creator of the Jamie Foxx show, starring Jamie Foxx. And his new project is also starring Jamie Foxx. It is called Dad, Stop Embarrassing Me, and it's streaming on Netflix right now. His name is Bentley Kyle Evans.
Damn, Gina.
Ha!
I had to do it. Nice. Yes.
And we want to welcome everyone from our Talk to Me Tuesday family. That's our conversation we have every week, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Go to my website, click the link, and join us. And our super fan shout out is for Troy. Say hi to Troy, everybody.
Hey, Troy.
Troy. What's up, man?
What's happening, Troy?
And I would like to begin today's proceedings by letting you guys know that the universe has indeed spoken to me, and it pissed me off.
What else
is
new, Adam?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Well, let's start with the positive. First of all, spring is in the air. You can tell. The birds are chirping. My allergies are kicking in. And the food trucks are showing up at the beach.
Hallelujah.
That's a start. Yeah.
That's a sign. Because I walked to the beach. Actually, now I'm riding my bike around because I have the COVID-19 on my ass. It's huge. So I got to drop some weight. So I'm riding my bike, and I see the food trucks, and my favorite food truck is there, the Day of the Dead taco truck.
The Day of the Dead taco
Yeah,
truck.
You love that.
Yeah, the Day of the Dead taco. It's that big black truck with the skull on it, and they have a lovely fish taco. And the lady recognized me from Top Gear, but she thinks I'm Tanner, because she keeps calling me Tanner.
Funny. Yeah.
You look so much alike.
Because she does. She says, Top Gear, Tanner. So I had the Day of the Dead taco, a lovely lunch down by the beach, and I'm riding my bike, right? So I end up down by Pico, and it's hot, all right? Pico is this main street here in California. And so I go into this bodega to get some water.
Right.
And at the bodega, the Day of the Dead scratchy lottery tickets are right there. Same
what?
Skull, same color. How do I not listen to the universe?
You have to.
Yes.
Wow.
So I bought a ticket, and guess what? I hit for a deuce.
You want $200?
Nope. $2 American.
See, I was going to $2,000.
Nope.
Wow.
$2. That was it.
Can I guess what you did after?
Go ahead.
Bought 2 more tickets?
I did. And you know what happened?
Nothing.
Nothing. I gave it all back. That's why I'm pissed at the universe.
Is that what the story you're sticking to?
That's my story. It got me in there to spend the money. And then when I needed it, it just left me there.
You're down.
And now I'm down.
See, I go more intense with that.
Go ahead.
I go another layer.
What's your layer?
Maybe I was supposed to stay in that bodega a little longer because crossing the street, I could have gotten hit by a car.
Ooh.
Nah, I'm pissed off. I'm down.
I try to see the positive. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Yeah, Phil.
You could have paid it forward and given the money to someone else, like a homeless person. Maybe you're supposed to do something like that.
Ooh, judgy.
saying. Thanks, it may have had other intentions.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for judging me. What did he do? He keeps gambling. Obviously, it's all about him.
Go ahead, Mark.
Adam, I'd be mad at the universe for taking you there in the first place, too, because I just looked up the lottery ticket, the scratcher, Dia de los Muertos, and it says here, Dia de los Muertos has a score of 59 out of 100, making it one of the worst scratch-offs in the entire country. So it's guiding you to a terrible scratch-off.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what we've learned from this? One, we can't trust the universe, and two, I had no idea you could look up an instant lottery ticket. What the hell is that?
I was going to say, you need that website.
That's what I do.
Really? Wow. Triple P, the producer.
And researcher.
And researcher, yes.
Keeps producing.
Yeah. And we just learned that this whole day to dead lottery is a bad bet.
It's like the ping pong ball in the hole at the carnival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, shooting out like that. Remember the BB gun we had to shoot out the stars and the sights were always bent?
You got suckered.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was it. Universe took $2 out of my pocket.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just love how I look at the positive of it and you always go to the negative.
What's not the negative? I'm down.
No, right. See, because the universe gave you the $2. You chose to gamble the $2 away.
No, the universe said start gambling, but it didn't tell me to stop.
The universe said start gambling.
That's the thing. Okay. That's the message, all right? This up and take the universe side any way you want. I don't see you being a character on the universe's podcast, Philip.
Phil, you don't bet against the house. The universe is the house.
See? Look, the lady knows.
Okay, the universe, so I'm straight here. The universe is a casino. Is that what I understand?
With flashing lights.
Yeah.
And
this scenario, does that make the angel Gabriel a pit boss?
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, there you go.
I will tell you this, and if you see him taking out the horn, get the hell out of the casino. But I actually did think of Phil because Phil always sees signs. He's always seeing signs in the universe, and I don't, but Phil is. And I looked this up. This was on Chopra.com from Deepak Chopra. It says, remember that you have the power to see signs and the universe will communicate, but you will see whatever you want to see. All right. If you want the universe to say something, you will bend it to meet your desires. This may not be the universe speaking to you. This may just be your lunacy, Philip. That's what it says right there.
It says Philip.
Okay, I put that in.
I get what you're saying, but look, I know the universe speaks to me through music. I'll hear a song. Mm-hmm. I see numbers on my clock radio. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll look down at the precise moment and see a fortune cookie on the sidewalk. I know without a shadow of a doubt, that's for me. That fortune cookie's for me.
It's definitely against the 3-second rule. Don't touch that fortune cookie.
Yeah, don't eat it. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah, he lives by a Chinese restaurant.
I'm going to get Phil those tea things where you take out a tea bag.
He's got those too.
I have those too, the yogis. I love them.
He's like, hey, listen, you know what it said on my yogi tea today?
I like those too.
It says you're a 12-year-old girl. That's what it says.
Hey, if it can make you smile and push you in a positive direction, why not? We see what we want to see, maybe.
Right.
I see angel numbers all the time.
How's it working out for you?
Oh, great. I follow them. I do the secret. You won't do it. I do it. I told you about the marble. I'm telling you, it works.
What marble?
Don't.
Yeah. I envisioned a marble, a black marble with a little nick on it. And so help me God, 3 weeks later, there's the marble on my counter as I was doing the dishes. I have no idea how I got there, but the universe dropped off that marble in my apartment.
So that works?
Yes.
Okay. And why won't you think of a bag of cash, you moron?
Right.
That's next. That's coming next.
Okay. So, Phil, is it fair to say that you see recurring signs and experiences?
Absolutely.
Okay. Fine. So, also from the Chopra website, it says, make note of reoccurring experiences. The universe is not subtle, which is good, because I don't need soft and subtle. I need loud and obvious. The universe will keep communicating to you until you get the message. It is then beholden on you to act. Now, Bentley got a message from the universe, and he took action and bet on himself. I bet on the day of the dead lottery ticket, and I lost, but Bentley's bet paid off big. You guys listen to this, and we will see you on the other side.
Sometimes the universe is trying to tell you something. Sometimes it makes our lives easier, and some other time we may have to suffer from unbearable pain before finally learning the lesson.
The universe said start gambling, but it didn't tell me to stop.
The universe said start gambling.
That's the thing.
You're listening to the Adam Ferrara Podcast.
Good God, this is 30 minutes you'll never get back.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Yes, Virginia, there is live comedy again. I'm coming to the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia, April 30th and May 1st. And I'm going to be in Richmond, Virginia, May 6th through the 8th at a new club called the Sandman Comedy Club. There's a link for tickets right here in the show notes, or you can go to my website and click the link there. And as always, if you can make any of these gigs, please come up after the show and let me thank you personally for all the love and support you've shown me and this podcast.
Pay attention when I'm talking to you, boy.
ADHD, it's not just for kids.
Nice boy, but doesn't listen to a word you say.
Welcome to the ADD interview. It's not that you're not interesting, it's just that I can't focus. And my guest this week is...
Oh, look, a bird!
My guest this week is a writer, producer, director who made his acting debut in the movie House Party. He went on to showrun the smash hit sitcom Martin, starring Martin Lawrence. He co-wrote the movie A Thin Line Between Love and Hate, also with Martin Lawrence. He then teamed up with Oscar winner Jamie Foxx and co-created that hit sitcom, The Jamie Foxx Show. Combination was such a big hit, they're doing it again. The new show starring Jamie Foxx is called Dad, Stop Embarrassing Me, and it's streaming on Netflix right now. He was born by the Bay, raised in L.A., and decided to go into show business while laying under a car and dodging gunfire. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, help me welcome Bentley Kyle Evans. How are you, my friend?
Woo, man, you should be my publicist, man. That is fantastic. I am doing great, man, doing fantastic. In this very moment, I'm doing perfect.
Good for you. Well, that's all we have is this moment, my friend.
That's it.
I want to take you back to that moment. You're laying under a car. Caps are flying around, and you're thinking, what do I want to do with my life?
No, man, you know, it was in the height of the Crips and the Bloods in L.A. and right. The red and the blue. I was randomly at a park, and right. This guy rolls up in a lowrider. He gets out with a sawed-off shotgun, and he starts shooting in the air. And so, you know, we were pretty much good kids. So, you know, we weren't used to that. So I jumped underneath a car, and my buddy Tommy, we're underneath the car, and we're freaking out. And all of a sudden, as we're laying underneath the car, you see these 2 feet walk by from underneath the car and they stop. And I'm going, oh, shit, he knows we're under here. It's over. Right. And then after about 30 seconds, he just walked off and we're shivering in our boots and hopped in his car with a whole bunch of other thugs and they sped off. And that's when I knew, OK, my life can be gone in a split second.
Damn. How old were you when that happened?
I was 19.
That's some scary stuff, because right away, you know, I would start thinking, what have I done? And is he looking for me? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It was like, it was a time where we grew up in, you know, in a neighborhood where it was like, we were considered the good kids, the Hills kids, mm-hmm. but Crenshaw Boulevard was just a stone's throw away, yeah. and they knew the difference. And so they felt like we were the spoiled rich kids. We weren't, but that's what they felt like.
Yeah,
we were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, they just came up to disrupt our fun. And they did it that day, because all you saw was kids running in every direction.
Damn. And so that happened. And you and Tommy, if I remember the story correctly, you went and knocked on Robert Townsend's door and said, listen, we'd like to make a change.
Yeah. You know, it's like you don't know the proper etiquette. Mm-hmm. You don't know that you don't just go over to somebody's house
right.
and knock on that door. And listen, we went over there and it was like, Robert answers the door and he's looking like, what the hell are you kids doing here? And, you know, my thing was, hey, we're here to sign up for show business. Isn't this what you sign up? We want to sign up for Hollywood. Is this how that works? We had no idea. This is not how it works. And so, you know, Robert was gracious enough to humor us and say, why don't you come back tomorrow at 6 a.m. if you want to help?
Right.
And bring some donuts. Be here at 6 a.m. Don't be late. Mm. So I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I knew it was better than the alternative.
Right. So Robert took it. And was that Hollywood Shuffle? Was that the set of Hollywood Shuffle?
That was the set of Hollywood Shuffle, 1986. I got a fast training course on what show business was that day.
Yeah.
It was like, load up the cars. We're going to the first set. And because we didn't have the convenience of a budget.
Right.
You know, we were everything. You might have been the cameraman that day. I mean, yeah. whatever. Whatever they needed from you, you had to do.
Yeah, you were thrown into the deep end, and Robert graciously took you under his wing to do that. But the neighborhood you grew up in, it was a showbiz neighborhood. You were in Windsor Hills?
I was in Windsor Hills. So you know, I grew up with like Ray Charles's kids. I grew up with Ike and Tina Turner's kids.
Ray had a lot. Ray had like 12, 13 kids, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Ray had a bunch of kids. Yeah. But the ones that lived with him
right.
were the ones.
Okay.
Those were the ones I grew up with. And so, you know, it was a lot of show business people around there, a lot of doctors and lawyers. They're now calling that area the Black Beverly Hills, which I'm like, oh, okay, whatever you want to call it. But it's just good old fashioned Windsor Hills for me too.
I wanted to ask you this, because everyone comes here, Bentley, to be in show business. You were in L.A., so it wasn't a thing for you. Did you have the awareness that you wanted to do it? Because a lot of my friends that I know grew up here never really considered it. And I didn't know if that was your experience.
Never a day. I mean, it was almost like the corny thing to say if you wanted to be in show business. Mm-hmm. Like, I went to school with some show business kids, and you know, they would get out of school early because they had to go on auditions, and we were like looking at them like they were special, but you never saw yourself in that position. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was like, that's kind of corny. We don't do that. That's not something that we do. I wanted to be a real estate guy like my dad.
Yeah.
But it just fell into my lap, and I realized that I wanted to do it, and I wanted to do it for the rest of my life, because it was so fun, first and foremost, but I just felt like I was a natural for it. Not necessarily the acting, but I felt like I was a natural for the medium just in itself.
Yeah. When you were on the set, I read an interview with you where you said you knew you wanted to be behind the camera. That struck me like, oh, okay. That's awareness of what you can do, not what you hope to be. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. It does. I wanted to be behind the scenes because I feel like I'm an outgoing person, but there was still a little insecurity about everybody looking at me. Mm. And that's what, you know, when you're acting, I remember when I first started acting, I did an episode of Family Matters, a guest star role. And when I walked in the door, I never felt so nervous. You can't tell when you watch it, but I was like, oh my God, why is everybody staring at me? Well, they're supposed to. You're the actor.
Yeah.
And the camera's on you and it's your turn. But I just felt that it was a very lonely place, and I just didn't have that yearning for that kind of attention.
And it was funny when you say you could see people nervously act. There's a scene in Pulp Fiction. You look at Uma Thurman when she's smoking a Lucky with Travolta. And
yeah.
in her tight shot, you can see the Lucky shaking.
Really?
Yeah. Look, next time you look at it, you'll see the smoke shaking.
I have to check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you said that not knowing the acting stuff and not being nervous, I promised myself I wouldn't say this, but it's too late. I'm going to say, what's up, Almond Brown? Because that was your acting. For those of you listening, if you never watched Martin, it was very, very funny. And you did a character that you weren't Almond Brown, but you said that to Martin. And
you said, you know what's so funny? I have to say, I borrowed
Yes, you did.
Little Richard.
So
Little Richard had done an episode of Martin. Uh-huh. And when he came to the show, he was so, you know, Little Richard's colorful. And he said, you and Martin do all this? And I said, well, yeah, Richard, we do. He said, well, Martin is he's a small piece of leather and he's so well put together. And I said, oh my God, I gotta use that, right? So the way the whole thing happened with me and Martin was, it was a day where he was just ticked off. And he's just mad at the world for whatever reason. And I just felt like I could break the monotony. So I walked over to him and tapped him on his shoulder. And he turned around with a scowl on his face. And I said, what's wrong? And he was like, what? I said, why are you acting so tough? You acting like you mad. Why are you so tough? And he was like, hey, Bentley, I'm not playing. Don't mess with me right now. And I was like, oh, you're so tough. You're just tough and almondy. And he's trying not to laugh, but he's got this frown on his face. So now I leave and go back to the writer's room and I'm going, okay, that either went really good or I'm probably going to get fired.
Right.
Then I get a phone call and the first AD says, Martin wants to see you on set right away. I'm going, oh boy, I overdid it. He's calling me to tell me to pack my office up. Mm. Instead, when I got to the set, he says, hey, do that character you was just doing. I said, what character? He goes, you know what you was just doing when you were down on stage. And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, you know, he was calling me Almondy. And I was like, oh no, man, I'm not going to do that on TV. He was like this. Yeah, you are. He said, I need you to write some pages and you're going to do that character. And I don't want to hear nothing else about it. And that's how that came about.
Oh, that was great. Little Richard, man. Okay. Bentley, when I go up on stage, I go up to Long Tall Sally. Because they say my name and then Richard just screams and I walk out.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I time it when I turn around when the music kicks in. And it's just, just gets you going. Rich, do you know the quote from Richard when he goes, I found God, I found Jesus, I went down to the river, I threw in my rings, I said, take them, Jesus, I said, take them from me, take them all. And to this day, I wish I knew where that river led out.
My God, you got him down perfect.
Oh, I love Little Richard. I saw him and interview him when he was going, I was purple before Prince. And I was just crying laughing.
You know what he called me when he saw me? He said, ooh, how tall are you? I'm 6'5". So he goes, how tall are you? How tall are you? And I was like, that's my nickname, Tall. All right. He was like, I've seen him tall like you before. Okay, well, thank you, Richard. I really appreciate that, you know. Richard was a mess. He was a very funny guy.
Oh, God, is that funny. Oh, but that show, Martin did the coolest thing. I met him once. Bentley, I just started doing stand-up, and I got a gig in Syracuse. I was a dishwasher in a kitchen. And I told him, I said, I'm taking off. I got to go. I got my first week in comedy and stand-up. You know, you working for a week. I'm like, oh, Lord. And it says comedy club in the gig. So it's not like you're at some bar. You know, this was official. And I was working with Martin Lawrence. Took off work, drove up to Syracuse, and the MC, I did 10 minutes up front, middle act, brought up Martin, and then I just hung around and just paid attention. I'm taking him to the airport at the end because he asked me for a ride.
Really?
Yeah, and he turned around, he looked at me, and he said, you keep doing what you're doing. I said, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, I know I can take an audience to a place, and you can too.
Interesting.
Hearing that from Martin, you know, not just to have that, that he watched me, one. And two, that he thought enough to tell me that. And it always stuck. Never seen him again after that. But I still remember that how that affected me. And you're in that position now because you have your studio and being the executive producer, you run everything. So when actors come to you, you seem to be aware of your position that your words matter and are listened to.
Yeah.
And I noticed the family atmosphere that you provide is I've been fortunate enough to work in those circumstances, too. Rescue Me, Nurse Jackie, Top Gear, all the shows I've been on, they pretty much have been family atmosphere. Now, dysfunctional families, a lot of yelling.
Right, right.
my question to you is this. How do you separate talking to someone that works for you, that's in your family, by saying, this is work, this is what we do at work, and I'm not talking to you as my sister, my cousin. I'm talking to you as, you know, the DP. I'm talking to you as the script supervisor.
I can get away with it with everybody except for my wife.
Man, so me too. Damn, me too. Oh.
Hey, listen, she don't play that shit. She is like, you know, she does all my set design and all that, and she's very good at it. But if I give a critique that, you know, I could normally give a stranger that I don't know, I could say, I don't like that, change that. She'll go, what is it that you don't like?
Ah, yeah.
Well, I you know, I don't like the color. Well, you do it yourself then. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So to keep the peace, I usually don't look at any of her work until it's already done.
Right.
And then I come in and give my opinion. But it's a balancing act. You know, I've worked with my nephews. Mm. One of my nephews is a first AD for me. My other nephew has gone on to become the showrunner for Wild and Out with Nick Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
My sister's a writer, producer that has done sitcoms with me and some without me. And my brother is a writer, producer as well. And my son's an actor. My daughter is a writer for Disney. So it's become a family business. It didn't start out that way, but it's just become that.
But yeah, because the family, even in the shows you put together, and I wanted to ask you, how much input did you have on Martin and Jamie? Because they're pretty much their visions, because their name's in the title, you know, and you're there to clear the path and facilitate it. But I'm sure you get to contribute some of your experiences and family, you know, stuff to put in there. How much of that was in there? That was you.
I would say, you know, with Martin especially, you know, there's a certain affinity to Martin because a lot of the Martin Gina storylines pretty much mirrored my wife and I's story. So, you know, as I was, I wasn't married yet, and we were doing, you know, all my experiences that I would, that would happen to me over the summer, I would come back in the writer's room and I would tell the showrunner at the time what these stories were and basically based Martin and Gina on me and Val.
Yeah.
It was like, that was our relationship being played out. Of course, exaggerated with other writers' input, but the storylines were derived from my real life.
Yeah.
So I would say when I watched the Martin show, I'm like, it brings back all kinds of memories, not to just being in the writer's room, but to the story that led to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And that grounds everything. That everything is rooted in truth. And that's I do the same thing with stand-up. Like, I know, like, if that bit came from this incident, I know where I've colored it in and I know where I've blown it up and exaggerated it to make the funny. But every time I do it, I still go back in my head on stage to that moment, especially when I talk about my dad passed away. And whenever I do bits about my dad, I'm doing his voice and he's with me. You know, it's a weird little thing that he's with me. And just so you know, in my house, when the Martin and Gina comes up and I do something that my wife wants to take exception with, I hear, damn, Gina.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Listen, it was so many references that came out of that show that have become a part of pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think that it was done on purpose. It was like, these are just crazy things that would fall out of Martin's head. Like, damn, Gina.
Yeah.
And then we would go, that's funny. Let's write that into the next episode.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, the guy was creative, man.
We had the same thing on, not Rescue Me, The Job. We did a cop show with Leary before we did the fireman show. And it was one episode I remember. We were hanging out in his hotel suite and there was a brass telescope by the window. So me and Lenny Clark and Denz were all taking turns fighting, looking at the telescope. 3 weeks later, there was an episode called Telescope.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Do you know that you had that wherewithal to do that facility, or was that something that was shown to you when you started working on a set?
I had no clue. I didn't know what the inner workings of show business was. I just knew that I had auditioned and got some roles, but I didn't know the other side whatsoever.
Mm.
But I was a quick learner. And when I got in that writer's room, I felt like I finally arrived. I finally found something that I can say that I think I'm good at.
Right.
And it just fit. It fit. And I watched all the other writers and I tried to sit like them.
Mm.
And I tried to find my leaning in the chair like them. I was just emulating what I saw these other people doing.
Yeah.
And I would listen to their stories about, I was working with these two writers, Billy and Jane, and they had worked with like Lucille Ball. And I was like, yo, you worked with Lucy?
Yeah.
And, you know, but they, in one of the later incarnations of Lucy shows.
Yeah, the Lucy show. Worked,
yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. You know, so their stories were magical, and hearing about old Hollywood. And I quickly, you know, started getting into the conversation and learned how to, you know, you know, talk about the business in a way from my perspective. And you know, the respect was there. It was just a mutual respect. So we just, I just got in there and figured it out really, really quick. And that was emulate everybody else and then your own lane.
Yeah, because I was in a writer's room briefly when I started and I realized I can't do this. I'm going to be fat as a house. They put you in a writer's room with no windows and they just feed you like a veal.
and it's free and I was just
Bentley, I was a joke pony. I would come in just to do punch up after run throughs and that's all I did. But I remember sitting and go, let me pay attention. And my father's words came into my head. He goes, keep your mouth shut. When you listen, you learn, and when you talk, you teach, and you got nothing to say yet. I got it. So it sounds to me like you had the similar experience, but I wanted to be there, and I was excited to be. When I'm on a set, Bentley, everyone's around. It's a whole community thing, and I just did an episode of NCIS, and we couldn't traffic. We couldn't go around like we used to. You know, you go to wardrobe, you go to makeup. That's where everybody hangs out. Because of COVID, in your trailer, wearing a mask, you know, talking to people. So I missed that experience of being on a set, but I'm very grateful every time I am. And I know what it takes to get there. And one of the things I admire about you is not now you learned how to do the art, but you also learned how to do the business. Tell me about Harvest Studios.
Here's the thing, man. And I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but
I'll say this, you know, I did. So after doing 5 years of Martin, doing 5 years of the Jamie Foxx show as a showrunner, creator and everything else, at the end of that experience, I still didn't know show business, as crazy as that sounds.
Right.
So I realized that I wasn't in show business. I was in the writing and producing business. Mm-hmm. That's the business I was in.
Yeah.
But the executives and the powers that be at the studios, they were in show business, because show business means you're buying and selling and wheeling and dealing in shows and having an interest in shows. So at that point, I realized that I don't really know anything about the business. I don't know what I want to do after this. Mm. And so I took some time off and I ended up doing this independent film called Rude Boy. And I shot it in Jamaica with some little cheap cameras just to see what I could do. Right. And we actually sold it. But what I learned during that experience was I learned the distribution model. I learned how you take your product and go out and sell it. And I started learning what that was about. So then I ended up, I was out of work for many years after the Writers Guild strike. And I had heard about what Tyler Perry was doing.
Yeah.
And I knew that he owned all of his content. And I really didn't even know, what does that mean when they say they own their own content? But it was like they own their copyright. And so I went to work with Tyler for a very short period of time. And I realized that he knows nothing more than I do. It's just that he put himself in a position to where he can own his own content and distribute it. Mm-hmm. I know how to make it because I did spend enough time learning how to make a show. I never went up and touched the sets and realized that they're just plywood until I had to. So I said, you know what? I'm going to try to make a show on my own without any help from any studio. I'm going to raise some money and I'm going to shoot an independent show. And I did. I created this show called Love That Girl. And we shot 4 episodes on a shoestring budget. And I was able to go out and get distribution on my own and still own the content. And then I realized, wow, this is something bigger than I had ever even imagined. But doing that, I had to find a studio to shoot Love That Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of independent studios sitting around. So I had the idea to sit down and get a warehouse and kind of convert it into a studio. And that's what I did. And 8 years later, I'm still there at Harvest Studios and we're still shooting shows at least, you know, 30 episodes a season.
Yeah. See, I love that because you took control and you were able to pivot. I want to ask you this. Was there anxiety of, did you have anxiety making that change or taking the time to allow yourself to learn and do that? Did you come up against an idea you had about yourself? And did that cause any anxiety? Basically, I'm asking for me, Bentley, because I'm in a world of shit right now.
Yeah, man. Shit, let's talk about it. I was terrified. Let me just say that. I was absolutely terrified. But I also knew that Hollywood wasn't knocking on my door.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you get to an age and you go, I don't know anything else. What could I do?
Yeah.
I don't even know where to sign up to be a sky cap at the airport. I don't know. What do I do? Right. Yeah. And so you just kind of take a chance on yourself. And I was scared because we're all afraid of the unknown.
Sure.
But there was something that kept echoing in my head that I had heard. And that was, build it and they will come. That you have to build it and they will come. And so I just focused my attention and said, I'm going to create a show and I'm going to write it as if it already exists. And I'm just going to write multiple episodes, which we as writers, as you know, we don't do that.
No.
You write a pilot or a pitch. But I said, no, I'm going to write this thing as if it exists and I'm going to breathe life into this thing. And I did. And so it was a very scary experience. And then also you have to go to people to ask them for money and ask them favors. And I don't like doing that.
No, me neither.
You know, I don't know if it's pride or what, but you just don't like to do it.
Yeah, I think it is pride. And it's the idea that you have of yourself. It's your ego, too, you know. And what I found in asking people for help, which is goes against my conditioned responses, whatever that is, they're more than happy to do it. And you learn more about yourself outside of yourself than you do sitting inside. Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense in the world. I always say that you can't appreciate the art when you're in the picture.
Yeah.
But when you step outside the picture and look back at the art, you can see the entire, all the art. You can see the whole picture.
Yeah. And you're not aware of what you're putting out until it's reflected back, especially by people you respect. And like, you know, I started doing this thing during the pandemic. I got to do something, right? I got this little studio. I put this whole thing together 45 minutes before they said, stay home, you know? So
yeah.
Thank God I got that. Thank God it goes, here, I'll give you this, but you better do something with it.
I love it.
And it's amazing the feedback I got when I just put the intention out there and I realized how much I'm standing in my own way. You know, I had like, I get to talk to you. I got, Nathan Lane did, a hero of mine did the show for me. Jay Leno said, yeah, why not? You know, come on. Call me. It's like, and I don't like to call people, but having these people help me do this and want to talk to me really just put a lot of wind in my sails. And when I see you taking the reins of guiding your own ship, it's like, those are people I want to talk to. You got the money, if I'm not mistaken, the original Harvest Studio, the money came from Roscoe's. Was I right?
Well, no, that's not 100% correct. What happened was, The first bit of money that I got to get started was from a producer by the name of Jeff Franklin. Jeff had created like the show Full House.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah. And he had created Hanging with Mr. Cooper and a bunch of other shows. And Jeff and I were friendly because we both had season seats at the Lakers at the Staples Center at Center. And I would see him from time to time. And I knew he wasn't in show business anymore. But one day I just got up the courage to walk up to him and say, hey, man, you ever think about jumping back in show business? I got a project I want you to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't friends. We just were friendly.
Right.
And so he invited me to his house and I showed him my vision. I had these scripts that I had, you know, written. And I said, hey, man, look, if you're interested, mm-hmm. I could use, you know, some sort of cash infusion.
Yeah.
And I know you got it. Right. And he really appreciated my candidness. And he asked me, how much money do you need? I said, about $250,000.
Right.
He goes, all right, well, let me take a look at your project. And he calls me back a week later and he goes, you said you're going to shoot 10 episodes. And I said, yeah. He goes, I don't believe you can do it. But if you commit to doing 4, I'll give you the money. And so I said, all right, well, let's just do the 4 then.
Okay.
So he gives me the money and then he gives me money. Now other people start bringing me money.
Mm.
And I'm going, wow, this is crazy. Martin Lawrence offered me money. I wouldn't take his money though.
Right.
I said, I'll take your money because we're friends. And if I fuck off your money, we're not going to be friends again. So
smart.
I just need your name as an executive producer. So that was our deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, once I got distribution, I actually went to a friend of mine who introduced me to the owner of Roscoe's, Hudson. And then Herb had this kind of janky studio on Pico Boulevard in the heart of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, hey, we could set up shop here for a short period of time. And we did. And it was like, hey, are there rats in there? I think it might be rats. It was janky as they came, you know, like old boxes, old crates of flour from Roscoe's waffle mix and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like this place that really wasn't conducive for making TV shows, but we made it work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there for a short period of time, maybe about a year, until I transitioned to Northridge, California, and found my own warehouse.
Yeah. You started the momentum and you got it up to critical mass where you attracted others. In reading about you, I'm like, man, I wanted to know how you did that. And you got past you to do that. Was it a lot for you to say, oh, I need about $250,000?
Yeah, it was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my entire life, because now you're sitting there going, you say it and you're going, waiting for the response. Like, what's he going to say? It was very difficult to do. And then, you know, you're thinking, it's ego too, because you're thinking, okay, I've been a writer and producer in this town for many years. And are they going to look at me like, why are you asking me for money? Don't you have money?
Mm-hmm.
Am I exposing my financial position to them?
Mm-hmm.
And time, I had ran really, really low on funds too, because, you know, it was many, many years that I didn't work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all these things are playing in your mind, but you got to get past yourself, like you said, and just say, look, I got to put it all on the line here and do something different, because nobody's going to give me an opportunity. I have to take it. And this was the very first time in my life that I took the cliche line of focus, and I really focused all my attention to where I felt like I'm focusing so much on this one particular thing, I could feel it happening, that it was coming into fruition. And it was a very scary thought, because I was like, I could have done this the whole time.
Yeah.
All I had to do was click my heels 3 times and I could have went home.
Yeah. Oh, Bentley, I have a machine that kicks me in the ass in the morning because I got tired of doing it. You know, here's my question. I don't know if you know the answer. Why do we beat the shit out of ourselves? Why do we approach the thing we know we have to do with whatever emotions keep up? For me, it's anger. Like, well, I don't need to. Why are you kidding? I did this and this, and now I have to do this. You know, that's the monologue in my head. I don't know if you got any kind of awareness out of coming through this on the other side that you could share with me. I want the audience to benefit, but it's more about me, Bentley. I got to be honest with you.
Hey, man, listen, I just think we get in our own way because we put these little roadblocks in front of ourselves. And I always say The Wizard of Oz is the greatest film ever made, because it's the most simple story that you could ever put together.
Mm.
You don't need all these hanger-ons. You don't need all these roadblocks. You conjure up good and evil in your mind, where all you have to do is just stay on your path and don't take all these other people along with you and get to where you need to get to.
Mm.
And once you get there, you realize that there's not even a wizard. No, there's nothing at the end of the rainbow. All you have to do is believe in yourself and you can get to where you want to get. And I truly looked at that as something that I had to realize, that I don't need all these other things. I don't need this agent or this manager or these friends to tell me that I'm great.
Mm.
I just have to believe that I'm great and actually act upon it. And it takes a lot of courage to do that. It takes a lot of courage to really believe in yourself and go 100% in the direction of you. You actually feel like you need to have these other elements to help you get to your goal, and you don't. You need a team, of course,
sure,
but you build your team. You don't just take on team members just to take them on.
Yeah.
So it was just a very bold move, and I'm proud of the fact that I did it. If I knew that it would be as hard as it was, I probably would have never done it, and I'd probably be a sky cat.
you wrote with Eddie Murphy.
I did, man.
Tell me that story.
So, you know, I'm a huge fan of Eddie Murphy since the day he set foot on Saturday Night Live.
As am I. He's from Long Island. He's from Roosevelt.
He is. And so, you know, to watch Eddie as a fan growing up, you know, once I got to meet him, I was starstruck, as I still am when I'm around him.
Mm-hmm.
But I was starstruck, and I never thought I would actually get to know him and then actually end up working with him. But what happened was, a friend of mine, Trent Gums, is like really, really tight, good friends with Eddie.
Mm.
And he knew that I was a fan. And every now and then he would bring me up to Eddie's house and we'd have, you know, a laugh or two. But it was still a very distant relationship.
Sure.
And one day I was just voicing my opinion, and I said, you know what, I would love to write something for Eddie. And so Trent tells Eddie that. And Eddie says, I have some ideas. Tell him to come up to my house. So I couldn't believe I got the call.
Mm-hmm.
And I pull up with my laptop computer, and he just starts talking. And I'm going, okay, yeah, yeah. He goes, catch what I'm saying. and just write it down. So then I started throwing in my own opinions, and Eddie stopped me. He was very polite. And he said, hey, listen, you know, the way that this is going to work is I have a vision and I brought you here to write my vision. So I got to get it out of my head and on paper. So I'm really not interested in anything you have to say. And I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, that's a long ride home.
Long ride home, man. Yeah. And so I'm going, okay. And he goes, you know, I don't want to be offensive, and hopefully I'm not, but this is how we're going to work together if we're going to work together. Mm. It's about what I want to do. And I was like this, okay, I just got chastised by Eddie Murphy. But then I understood his style, and he really wanted to get his vision on paper. It was like, I need you as a writer to write my vision. And once I got that into my psyche, then I could sit down and take his notes and really take copious notes and then give him back a draft of a script to where he actually respected it. And he was like, you actually made my words come to life. And so then he started trusting my ability to do it. And so at the end of it all, I ended up writing 3 feature film scripts with him, and none of them have been produced yet. But I really think we're very, very close to getting one of the 3 produced. I'd be almost surprised if it didn't. I think we'll start seeing something in the press soon.
That's great. Well, you just did what the advice you gave me in that story. Eddie's got to paint the picture to get the art, and he's in it. So he wants you to help him paint the picture. And then when he's out of it, that's when you can come in and give him another avenue to tune this thing up. Cause I'm the same way. It's like, I got to get it out first.
Yeah. Yeah. Because coming from a collaborative effort of being in a writer's room on sitcoms, you just kind of voice your opinion. You just start throwing stuff out. But it was different when I was working with him, because it was like, no, I don't want that. Yeah. That's what you do on TV. I need you to be quiet and write down what I want. And I was like, okay, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Multi-camera's a timetable. You get a script on Monday, you table read, draft, network notes, run through, and you got to flip this thing over. You tape in 2 on Friday, and it starts all over again. So that's why it's a free-for-all.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And at the same time, you're still fanboying a little bit over.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here with Eddie, and it's just he and I in a room, and I'm going, I can't, but I never would have dreamed this in my entire life, but I can't let him know that I'm tripping in this.
Yeah.
It's a wild experience.
Yeah,
man.
But think about that. And you grew up next to Ray Charles. You work with Gladys Knight.
Yeah.
Gladys Knight, she does the thing. The voice just goes through me. Gladys.
Yeah.
She did it. Did you ever see Gladys Knight, Etta James, Chaka Khan, and B.B. King?
Did I ever see them together?
There's a clip on YouTube. They're doing Ain't Nobody's Business. I think it's from the 80s. It's great, man. And Gladys takes the first one, and then Chaka Khan, then Etta James, and then B.B. plays a solo. And it's just wild when they're all together.
I never saw it, but I'll be looking for it. Yeah. I got a chance to see Gladys when I was a kid. She was at the Aladdin Hotel in Vegas, and I was about maybe 8 or 9 years old. And I got a chance to see Gladys for the very first time. And I was a huge fan. And then when I got to work with her, and she cooked dinner for the entire cast and crew, she's fantastic.
Oh, that's great. When I was doing my research on you, you said you grew up with Ray Charles's kids. And do you know the Ben Stiller story when Delamiro playing Vegas with Gladys Knight and the Pips? And they were in the pool together, right? So they're in the pool together, and Ben's in the pool. And the Pips taught him to swim in the pool.
Is that true?
Yeah. And he was doing an interview, and I heard in the interview, he was like, I thought the Pips taught everybody to swim. I was just a kid.
So funny, man.
Yeah. Well, man, keep doing what you're doing. I admire you as an artist, and I appreciate you taking time as a human being to give me and my audience to give us a little advice to get to where you're at, man. Congratulations, brother. Be well and be happy.
Thank you, man. You got to have me back on, too, man.
I'd love to. Best to you and the family, and best of luck with the new show. It's called Dad, Stop Embarrassing Me. It is on Netflix right now, and I want to thank my guest, Bentley Kyle Evans. Be well.
Thank you, sir. You be well yourself.
The ADD interview was brought to you by CruiseIntoWellness.com. CruiseIntoWellness.com for all your CBD needs. Now, let's say you've had no intentions of ever being in front of the camera. But one day on the set, you tried to cheer up Martin Lawrence by doing a character you borrowed from Little Richard. Martin liked it so much, he said, we're putting that in the show.
No, man, I'm not going to do that on TV. Yeah, you are.
This could cause you a little anxiety. So why don't you do what I do? Take one of the gummies they have at cruiseintowellness.com. They also have edibles, tinctures, pain creams, bath products, pet products. It's all made from hemp right here in the USA, and you get 20% off with the coupon code ADAM. 20% off anything they have at cruiseintowellness.com. Go, feel better.
I'm Bentley Kyle Evans, and that was 30 minutes that I'll never get back.
I had so much fun talking to Bentley. He is my new friend.
Yeah, I liked him too.
And I got to do my Little Richard impression, which was...
I heard that.
He liked my Little Richard. How do you not love a guy like that?
Well, what a character Little Richard must have been,
I went
right?
down to the river. I threw in my rings. I threw in all these. I said, take them from me, Jesus. Take them. I don't need them no more. And woo, I wish I knew where that river led out today.
You're funny, Adam.
Oh, that's not me. That's Richard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true. I come out to Long Tall Sally sometimes.
Yeah, I know you do that. Yeah. I love that song.
That's a me too.
Mm-hmm. But, it just gets your energy up.
And I come out in a dress.
No, but he was great. I mean, what an incredible journey he's had. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. You know what I liked about it is I really admire people that just say, I'll do it myself. You know, and
yes.
he opened up his own studio. He got past himself by asking for money. And then when he asked for money, more money showed up. Unlike when I ask for money from the universe, I win a buck and then they take two from me.
Well, I think there's a little difference, Adam.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay? You give it back.
I think he gambled on himself rather than a lottery ticket.
I was the one buying a lottery ticket. Your theory is flawed.
What I liked is the fact that he really evaluated himself mm-hmm. and said, okay, I can't do this. I can't do that. What can I do?
Right.
Since Hollywood's not knocking on the door.
Right.
Hollywood is fickle. And he said, you know what? I'm just going to write my stories and do it myself.
Yeah, he wrote as it was already a thing. Yeah, Mark.
I love that his backup career was SkyCap, except he didn't know how to become a SkyCap. It's like, I don't even know how to do that. What am I going to do? I can't be a SkyCap.
Yeah.
Like, but I know that feeling because when you're in this kind of business, it's like, what can I do outside of this land of, you know, make believe and play? What can I do?
I totally understand it. I didn't know what to do, so I just bought a bunch of microphones and called you idiots.
And by you idiots, he means you too, just so you know.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Yep, got that.
Or else it'd be a little fridgy.
Yeah.
After this podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, life is hard. Take it easy on yourself. The pod has ended. Go in peace.
Excuse me. I have an issue I would like to bring up. Mr. Podcaster.
Exactly.
Yeah, Mark.
Oh, I was going to say, that courage and that conviction in yourself to bet on yourself and to just go out and say, look, I know how to do this and I'm going to go do it. And it's just, I mean, I know I'm going to sound cheesy when I say this, but it honestly is inspiring. It really is.
It really was.
Yeah. He bet on himself and it all started hiding under a car to avoid gunfire.
Yeah. I mean, look what Bentley had to do on the fly when he's having a meeting, a creative writing meeting with his idol, Eddie Murphy.
A legend.
The idea of, like, you're having this meeting. You're like, oh, I got an idea. And then just have him be like, no, that's not how we do it. And to be able to react on that in the fly and still be productive and then finish through on it to get the final product and to continue to work with them. That is a tremendous ability to do. And it is not easy at all.
Yeah. You know what I admired about that was I would play in my head Eddie correcting me. For the rest of the whole night, I would be useless. Driving home, I'd be on the phone with you, honey. I'd call Phil. I'd call everybody. I'd conference you guys in. This is what Eddie said. What is it thinking? What do you think it means? It means you're never working with Eddie Murphy again. That's what it means.
Yeah.
I don't think Eddie's even going to allow you to watch any of his movies anymore.
It doesn't mean that the world revolves around you at all.
It does. It all revolves around me.
Well, you know I have a story where I adapted.
Please. I'm sorry. The chair recognizes the lady. Yes, darling.
I was going to Hong Kong for a visit,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up living there for 4 years.
All right, let's back up. Who are you visiting?
I was only going for a long weekend.
Right.
So, you know, what do you bring on a long weekend?
To Hong Kong? May I ask, against your will? Or
no, I was with a friend,
mm-hmm.
they got some bad news.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to stay there and help him.
Okay, you go for a weekend and you end up for 4 years. I need the rest of the story.
Well, it was a boyfriend.
Okay, I don't need the rest of the story.
I didn't want to say that. But yeah, and you know, you care about someone and you see them going through a hard time. And I knew that he needed my help. And I remember making that decision.
Mm.
I'm like, because I was living in France at the time. I'm like, I could just go back and just hopefully good for him.
Right.
Or I can stay and help him.
All right. So you had to adapt to an entirely different culture.
Yep.
And you didn't speak the language.
Nope.
And you're there with a guy who can't even hold a candle to me. I feel so bad.
Goodness. And I couldn't even buy shoes to fit me.
Why?
Because, I don't know, my feet are big. I have American feet. I don't know what it was. I asked an ambassador's wife, where do you find your shoes? And she said, oh, you got to go to Kowloon to this one store. And you know what the store is called?
Bigfoot?
No. My feet aren't big. They're just bigger, I guess, than most of the shoes there.
What's the shoe?
Snow White.
It's called Snow White?
Yes. So I wore Snow White shoes.
That's funny.
Yeah. That's the only place I could find my shoes.
That's funny. You know, if you went to the Wizard of Oz store, you could just click your heels 3 times and you're back at your apartment.
That would have been good.
Yeah. I admired Bentley's awareness when he was 19 years old. He realized he wants to be behind the camera. And not only did he create all this stuff, but he was smart enough to get into the business of show business.
Well, that's smarter, actually, than going for the fame is going for the
money.
What is it called?
It's called money.
No, what is that thing called?
Money. It's still called money. You can dress this up any way you want. It's money, baby.
Moolah, dinero. Yeah, that's it. Know.
Coin of the realm.
Cheddar.
Drachma. I want to thank you guys for being here.
Thanks, Tanner.
What a dick. I want to thank my guest, Bentley Kyle Evans. His new project is called Dad, Stop Embarrassing Me, starring Jamie Foxx, and it's streaming on Netflix right now. Honey, if they want to get a hold of us, where do they go?
TheAdamFerrara@gmail.com.
And the show is growing, and it's all because of you. Thank you so much. Please tell someone you love about the show, and if you get a chance to leave us a review, that helps us with our friend.
Mr. Algorithm, it really does help us, so please leave us a review.
Yeah, I have no idea how, but I thank you guys for doing it. And please remember, life is hard. Take it easy on yourself. Pod is ended. Go in peace.
I'll look down at the precise moment and see a fortune cookie on the sidewalk. I know without a shadow of a doubt, that's for me. That fortune cookie's for me.
Confucius say, Phil is an idiot.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.